This is a FUBAR Radio podcast. Go to FUBARradio.com for more details. Mark Dolan eats the news on FUBAR Radio.
You're right about that. It's FUBAR Radio, and I am Mark Dolan, and this is Mark Dolan Eats the News. The time is 12:01, and with me to masticate through the week's big, huge current affairs stories is a huge man in his own right. It's the one and only Leo Kurse from the hilarious world of comedy. Leo, welcome to FUBAR Radio.
Hello, Mark. Good to be here. Welcome back. I'm the same height as you, I think.
Listen, you're absolutely right. What is it, 6'5"?
6'6".
Right. Oh, no, you see, you've got the edge on me.
Maybe I've overjudged.
You've got an extra inch.
Right.
Which I got to say, I did feel
I've got it in the wrong place, I think.
I'm sure you have. Listen, you're a perfect specimen, both physical and spiritual. Welcome to the show. We've got a very, very lot of stories to get through. So many big stories. One quick question on Brexit, which has obviously been done to death as a story.
Yeah.
Are you sick of it, or are you very engaged with it and loving every minute?
I'm a little bit sick of it. I'm a little bit scared because my mum lives in Spain, and it looks like we're going to leave. And like then, my mum's either going to have to become a full time. She's going to have to convert to Espanol,
Spanishness.
Yeah. She's going to have to do all that.
She's going to have to come back to
rainy Scotland.
She's going to have to eat more tapas.
Wear one of those hats.
Yeah.
Grow a moustache. Get a piñata. I don't think I've got the right country.
No, I know what you mean, though. It's all in that kind of Venn diagram of Europeanness, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yes, so, that's right. I've got the same problem. My wife is German, right? So if we have Brexit, she'll have to go.
She'll be put in a camp.
I'm afraid so, which would obviously be ironic, the shoes on the other foot, as a young German woman. But here's the thing. And, you know, obviously, I mean, as a precaution, I've packed all of her bags and everything's in storage just to be on the safe side. Now, look, clearly we are sick of it. But then again, it's absolutely huge. I could go in a little specific here because all the sort of discussions have been very broad.
Yeah.
I want to know what the Scots are going to do. Like, what way the Scots are going to vote? Because I think that in England, there's no understanding of what the Scots think of the EU.
Yeah.
And I'm inclined to think that Scotland is more Eurosceptic than we might realise.
Yeah. I mean, as a Scottish man who speaks for all Scottish people, I'm like the Louis Farrakhan of Scotland.
Yes, you are. You're the unofficial president of Scotland, aren't you, really?
Yeah, one day, Mark.
Correct.
I mean, I think Scotland is in favour of staying in the EU. Scotland's got quite a... Everybody's politicised there since the independence thing.
Right.
So they're in favour of staying in the EU, and they're also in favour of annoying English people.
Right, that's the main sort of pastime.
That's the stuff they've got to balance there.
Well, the thing about it is that if we have Brexit, then what will happen is that Scotland will have been taken out of the EU by the English, really.
Yeah.
And that's not... Even if you guys didn't like the EU, just the fact that your future has been dictated by the English is going
to
make
again.
You... Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Even if it was a good thing. Even if there was something the English did which meant all Scots get a swimming pool, they'd hate it because if it was the English that did it, well, then I don't want to swim anymore.
Yeah, absolutely. And coming so soon after, you know, the English were all like, oh, no, Scotland, you've got to stay in Britain. Like, we can't break up Britain. It's great. It's better together. And then they're like, oh, well, we're leaving Europe.
I do think it's the ultimate hypocrisy that it's the far right of the Conservative Party who are behind Brexit.
Yeah.
And therefore, those are the same people who are the most unionist.
Yeah,
and
that's true.
It's very hypocritical that they are against one union and for another.
Yeah.
Philosophically, I've got a massive, flask of tea, which has just been flying about the place. None of this kit's insured. Did you know that the equipment here at FUBAR Radio is from Gaydar Radio?
Oh, really? Yeah. I didn't know that.
Which I'm afraid closed down. It wound up because I don't really know why Gaydar Radio closed up, because
I think
being gay has never been more popular.
I think Grindr maybe pushed it. I mean, all of a sudden there's an easier way of talking to gay people in your area.
Well, I'm sure you're right. You're showing a lot of knowledge there, Leo. I love it. It's a great... You've done a Michael Barrymore. You've come out on air, which I think is absolutely perfect.
I'm now about to cry and kill somebody in my swimming pool.
That would be ideal. Now, here's the thing. So I think that it's going to be really difficult if we leave the EU. I've thought about it on so many different levels, and I've got two really non-political arguments to make. Because obviously you can go to town on the economic implications, and some people say it'll be good because we'll do deals with the rest of the world. Other people say we've got access to this huge market. It's our biggest market. It's where we sell everything. And, you know, we've gone around the houses. And I almost wonder whether it's more helpful to look at this philosophically in two ways. One, the EU is a club. Whether you like it or not, it's a club. It's a collection of countries. It's a loose club. We're not exactly besties. And there are countries within the EU that hate each other and all that. But we're all in a club. And I think it's kind of just human psychology that if you're in a club, you tend to kind of look out for the other people in the club, even in a very kind of just subtle, low-level, sort of subtle way. And therefore, I think if we leave the club, we immediately become the enemy.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. You know? We don't have so much of that protection against, you know, China, Russia, you know, countries that might...
Well, it's not just that. I mean, I think you could have a continental conspiracy against a newly independent UK.
Because, punishing.
Well, yeah, because in a sense, they certainly won't want to see this project succeed, will they? Yeah. Because imagine if Britain becomes a roaring commercial success and we've got annual growth of 9% every year and it's just, it goes nuts.
Yeah.
Well, then the French will be out. At the moment, the French are already highly Eurosceptic. Didn't you? People always think that the French are so part of the European project. Yeah. The public are disenchanted. In fact, populations across Europe are disenchanted with the euro and, of course, terrible currency.
Yeah.
And the whole. So therefore, you know, it could be a domino effect. So I think one thing is that it's a club, and I think clubs are just generally, they make sense, you know. Secondly, I think under what other circumstances would you follow the advice of Michael Gove, Ian Duncan Smith, Boris Johnson and Nigel Farage? I almost think it's like whatever they think we should do is the thing to not do.
Yeah, it's a Punch and Judy show.
Those guys being the face of the campaign is surely enough. Surely that makes your decision for you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because those guys are, I mean, let's look at their attitude to welfare and stuff like that. Historically, all of those people have suggested some form of privatisation of the NHS.
Yeah, yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think it is crazy, but the situation is such that people... The thing is, Europe is getting blamed for sort of the sort of mass immigration into Britain.
Yeah.
But the sort of mass immigration into Britain, it didn't all just come from Europe. And also, it's not the immigration that's the problem. It's the fact that the government didn't put infrastructure in place to deal with all the people coming in. So, like, where I live at the moment, there's 14 of us living in a warehouse, a sort of poorly colonised warehouse. Most of them are from Europe, funnily enough. Well, about six of them are from Europe. Others are, you know, immigrants from other parts of the country, such as myself. So people are saying, you know, look, our wages have been, because all the benefits of immigration, the sort of the increase in GDP and stuff, that's concentrated at the top amongst, you know, CEOs, shareholders, the people who cream off the benefits.
Yeah.
Whereas all the negative effects, which is pressure on the infrastructure, rising house prices, lower wages, that's concentrated at the bottom, working people, unskilled workers mainly. So unfortunately, you've got those people, and older people are going to be, because they're more nationalistic, so they're going to vote for Leave. They've already got houses and stuff. They're just doing it because they're racist. Whereas younger people who need a house can't get it, partly because of this mass immigration, so they're tempted to vote Leave as well, even though they're not racist.
Well, I know, and one of the big debates has been that a lot of older people, who of course are a central part of our society, and it's a great generation. It's the post-war generation, and we've got a lot to
thank. They're not that great. They never fought the Germans or anything, did they?
It's a good point, actually. Yeah. They just arrived.
Smoked dope and listened to the Beatles.
Mm. It's a good point, by the way.
Yeah.
I'm going to call my mum after the show and give her a right berating. But here's the thing.
Yeah.
There's an argument that older people shouldn't be allowed to vote. Because it doesn't affect them. Because the consequences of Brexit are only really going to kick in about 10 years, aren't they?
Yeah, yeah, that's a good point. When they'll all be dead, because the economy will tank so badly they won't have any food.
Yeah, well, that's exactly right. I mean, look, the whole thing is a big old headache, and I don't know what way it's going to play out, but I mean, the big surprise of the last sort of 10 days has just been this Brexit bounce.
Yeah.
Which doesn't seem like it's going away.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think it's just simply because... However educated you are, everybody, even the thickest person in our society, can understand that the idea of controlling immigration, that controlling numbers, you explain that net migration is 350,000.
Yeah.
Half of that is from outside the EU, half of it isn't.
Yeah.
But the EU number could be brought down to the thousands.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, it's a very crystal clear message, which everyone can get. And and that's where Farage et al. Have gained traction.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's something that affects loads of people. And, you know, we sort of need immigration in this country to keep the economy going. And, you know, so businesses can thrive and get the workers they need. But they need the infrastructure in place. They need the houses. They need the extra hospitals and schools and all the rest of it.
Which immigrants are our favourite, I think, is really the question. I mean, what's your favourite kind of food?
I'd say women from Eastern Europe are my favourite, because I'm a massive sexist.
Under the age of 30.
Yeah.
I think so. I think India, I would have uncontrolled immigration, because curry houses are disappearing.
Yeah, yeah. Well, because of the lack of shelves. Because the lack of chefs, not shelves.
No, they are. There's no
lots,
shelves.
Lots of shelves.
Everything is... No, I was in the kitchen of a curry house recently, and everything's just on the floor. I'm like, you guys, just think about it. You can get like a wooden platform which sits halfway up the wall. It's a shelf. I'll help you out with that.
Yeah. That's because they tightened the visa restrictions, so they can't import the chefs to make the curries anymore. Although that's sort of shown the point that having uncontrolled immigration pushes down wages, because the wages of chefs in curry houses have doubled because there's such a shortage of chefs. They're having to pay the existing ones loads of money to come and make
curry.
I'm
tempted to black up and get myself a gig down at the Taj Mahal on Holloway Road. I really am. I could, you know, it's up. I mean, I get taken care of with quite a significant package here at Foo Bar Radio. But, you know, you can't have too much money, can you?
Yeah.
I can sit there knocking off a lamb biryani all day. That sounds rude. Now, so we'll have to see. We'll watch this space. I mean, the only other thing I did think of is I feel like there are so many arguments that aren't being made that could be made. And one of them is counterintuitive. It's always good in politics to think, like, go against the grain and look at it from a completely different angle. And here's the thing. Maybe we should really tighten up non-EU immigration.
Yeah.
And we should really expand and encourage EU migration. And here's why. All of the European nations are similar in values, in religious background, in history, also just the various skills that exist within that continent. We've got a lot more in common with the Romanians and the Bulgarians and the Germans and the French and the Italians than we do with, you know, South America, you know, Africa, Asia. I mean, there is the Commonwealth, of course.
Yeah.
But really, what you could have a situation is that you could sort of be cutting off your nose to spite your face.
Yeah.
But what you lose is an influx of, you know, quality humans who actually have sort of shared European values. It's like they haven't really thought this through as to what kind of immigrant you're going to get.
Yeah. I think there definitely needs to be something done to prevent the sort of culture clash that causes things like, I mean, in Cologne, where they had sort of unfettered immigration and a massive sort of influx of people from the Middle East. So these young Middle Eastern men who'd grown up in a society where you can just sexually assault women. It's almost encouraged.
Like Scotland.
Scotland or Cardiff. It's almost encouraged. And so they went out at New Year and, you know, arranged, you organised these sort of mass sexual assaults of women. So I think when people come to the country, there's got to be, you know, if somebody's coming from Paris, they'll probably get it that they're in the West, you can't do stuff like that. But if they're coming from, you know, the Middle East or whatever, they need to have some sort of, you know, just a checklist, you know, can you sexually assault women? No, you can't. You know, I mean, like, can you punch homosexuals? No, you can't do that either. You know what I mean? Just stuff like that. So they know that, you know, this is the West. This
I
is sort of a liberal.
Brilliant. I really are you terrorists? So are you terrorists? Yeah. Are you homophobic? Are you a bit rapey?
Yeah.
And tick any of those boxes and you're
at least just a checklist so they know, you know, they tick the box and then somebody comes around and says, oh no, actually you're not allowed to sexually assault women. You know, this is, you know, here's an educational video. This is how you behave. Now that you're in Britain.
I'm loving it. I'm feeling it. It's 12:14. It's Dolan and Curse, the double act that dare not speak its name. This is what you're listening to. It's the name of the show.
Mark Dolan eats the news on FUBAR Radio.
You're listening to Fubar Radio, UK's largest ad-free online radio station. And Paulie O'Curse has barely had a chance to have his meow meow, which he always has in the breaks during the show, just to keep the energy up. Where are we going next, Leo? What's caught your eye this week?
It's funny that you're talking about meow meow, which is not a local Chinese restaurant. It's one of the new drugs. One of the new drugs that people take. Because it's come out this comes out in the papers every once in a while. But drug experts, I don't know what their qualifications are. They're saying that drug addicts shouldn't be jailed, and personal possession and use of drugs should be decriminalised. And this comes out. I mean, it sort of makes sense, and it sort of is government policy. When I worked for drug and alcohol action teams, doing the intelligence and stuff, the strategy was to sort of not jail drug addicts, but to get them into rehab instead.
Yeah.
Because then it vastly reduces the sort of recidivism rate, or them committing further crimes. But I don't know. I just think that drugs these days aren't as good as the old days.
Right.
They're just not looking at the name, like Meow Meow. Meow Meow.
It's just silly, isn't it?
That's just a silly name. They've got JCB. They've got ketamine. That's a horse tranquilizer. You know what I mean?
Know.
Like, it's something that's designed to make horses go to sleep. You've got bath salts.
You're joking. Is bath salts a drug now?
Bath salts is a drug. Well, this is the thing. They're sold on the internet as bath salts and as plant food. So Meow Meow is sold as a plant food.
Well, it's funny you should say that, because before we came on air today, I did a line of Radox. And I've got to say, I've never felt better.
And your breath is so lavendery.
Yeah, no, I try. I try.
But it's any drug that can be sold as bath salts or plant food, I mean, like, what is this been sold? Are marketed at this Archer's demographic? I'm not sure. I mean, in my day and your day, because we're about the same age, aren't we?
Yeah, everything's very similar.
Yeah,
I'm basically
yeah.
trying to be you. I'm 42. You're a bit younger. You're 40, aren't you?
39, yeah.
39, you're a baby.
Close enough.
There's such an age gap. This conversation is almost inappropriate.
But yeah, when we were kids.
I'm basically grooming you.
Well, actually, if this was the BBC, I would be worried. When we were kids, we had proper drugs, like microdots. Do you remember microdots? Tiny little things that, like, they were literally like the head of a pin.
Right.
And I think the head of the pin, that's not the pointy end, that's the point of a pin, but the head of the pin is the other end of the pin, but it's still tiny.
It is, really, let's be honest.
And you get it on your finger, and, like, if you dropped it on the floor, you'd be scrabbling about on the floor, like, all night looking for your microdot, and you'd eat about 17 mouse shits, you know what I mean? It was terrible.
Amazing.
But you took one of those, and you were tripping, you were tripping till your mum came to pick you up the next day, you know what I mean? It was amazing.
I've never, this gives me a glimpse into Leo Curse, the early years. like teenage, I've never heard of this, the micro thingy.
It's like it's acid, basically.
Is it?
Yeah, we thought it was mescaline. Don't know what mescaline is, but we were told it was mescaline because, you know, there's so much folklore around drugs and stuff. But yeah, there's always, you know, people have such such legends around drugs and stuff. Like when Mitsubishi Ecstasy came out, everybody's like, oh, it's Mitsubishi brand. But of course it's not. It's made in Holland in some guy's garage. You know what I mean? Stirring it in his bath.
Do you think it should be legalized? Because I just wonder whether what it would do is it would stop. It would obviously kill the black market in drugs, but also a really worrying development has been the popularity of synthetic drugs.
Yeah.
Because I grew up, I was at university in the 90s.
Yeah.
And the kind of marijuana that went round was either just a bit of, like, a leaf of marijuana sort of just chopped up. So, you know, obviously it was against the law, but, you know, logic would say this come from a plant, you're smoking it.
Yeah.
It's probably not going to end in, like, a cardiac arrest or some kind of horrific A&E scenario.
Yeah.
And also the resin,
yeah,
which was basically the same thing, but just in this block of
it was the
matter.
Resin. The resin is adulterated, though. Basically, they mix sort of bonding agents in with the sort of resin. I mean, if you go to India and you get charis, one of my mates brought this stuff back in his arse. It's called charis. He came back. Through,
I love the way you said that without any fanfare. He brought it back in his arse.
Yeah, he came back through like Brunei.
What else
or something,
did he have?
Like, kill
was
you
it,
for
was
stuff
it like a great moment? As he just was it like a magician's trick? As various items came out of his arse.
I just wish he'd wrapped it up in something.
You know? That's why it's brown. Bag of meow meow, marijuana resin. Yeah.
What possibly? But this stuff was amazing.
A bottle of Grey Goose from the airport.
Yeah, no suitcase. Yeah, this stuff was amazing. So it's made just from like the guys who sort of rub their hands over the plant and like roll the resin straight from the plant into a ball.
That's amazing.
And it's really just a beautiful, beautiful smoke. But the stuff that we got in Scotland, because in Scotland, you know, all the drugs come up through England, and by the time you get to Scotland, all the nice stuff, the grass, all that sort of stuff has been filtered out.
Right.
You're left with soap bar, which is full of bits of plastic and stuff, and it's made from, there's maybe 40% cannabis material in there, and the rest is like car tires and stuff like that.
That's not ideal. And so what's happening now, though, is that, I mean, that was obviously very bad, but they've kind of processed this thing. What is it called? But it's a form of marijuana, but it's like, it's synthetic.
Oh, yeah, synthetic.
And it's green.
Yeah, yeah.
And
it's got crystals and stuff.
And it's got, yeah, and it's been happening in prisons, and
yeah,
the prison officers are just saying that since this stuff arrived, it's sort of skunk
it's
type.
It's killing people.
Yeah. And the problem is that people are kind of using it as marijuana,
yeah,
but it's not marijuana at all.
Yeah, yeah. It's made in a laboratory.
It's much more in the kind of Breaking Bad.
Yeah.
Area.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So they're trying to synthesize the THC, the stuff in marijuana that sort of gives you the high. But the thing is, I mean, I don't know, I always found like the THC, that's the other thing, like with weed these days, it's been bred, it's like crufts, you know, they breed it and breed it and breed it to make it as strong, the THC high as strong as possible, but that's not really the enjoyable bit. The enjoyable bit is the sort of cannabinoid high where you're just mellow and chilled out and enjoying your stuff. THC just makes me really paranoid and sort of unable to talk.
Now, listen, I think if I could press a button and make drugs not exist, you know, let's say I've got my three wishes, the genie out of the lamp. I would definitely, one of my wishes would be for drugs to not exist.
Right.
And for people just to go around and eat an apple, have a chat.
Yeah. Play some tennis.
Go running, play tennis, watch a Woody Allen film.
Yeah.
That would be amazing.
Yeah.
But there's this terrible kink in human nature that makes us want to escape from some kind of shortcut to pleasure. And I think it's a shame they exist. It would be brilliant if they didn't.
Yeah.
But then again, I love beer.
Yeah, it's not a drug though, it's a drink.
But that's the thing though, am I a hypocrite?
Not at all. Beer is wonderful, and I don't think it's ever caused any harm. I'm pretty sure.
Right, so you've obviously, I mean, have
nice
you
thing.
Ever been to Cardiff on a Friday night?
I was there last Saturday.
There you go.
I did the Jonglers.
All right.
I had the worst pint of Guinness in my life at the Jonglers. You know what Guinness is famous for having like a head on it?
Yeah, of course.
This was just completely flat.
Right.
Completely flat.
You got no head in Cardiff on a Friday night. That is a first, my friend. You need to examine how you're living your life. Yes, can I be honest with you? I think you can only buy Guinness in proper venues that really just deal with alcohol, like proper bars and things.
Yeah, yeah.
Because Guinness is like real ale. It's a bit more of an organic thing. It's not full of carbon dioxide to keep it fresh.
Right, yeah.
See, this is like, I'm in the foothills of ignorance here, but my dad was a very successful pub entrepreneur. He was a licensee at a leading North London hostelry called Sir Robert Peel in London's leafy Northwest London.
I think I've been there.
You're kidding me.
I think I have.
What, you know it?
Yeah, didn't they run a comedy gig there? Is it no?
Do you know what? Maybe since he retired.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of funny stuff happens there.
Right, yeah.
But that's maybe different. But anyhow, you could see that the beer, like the ale and the Guinness or whatever, it clogs up the pipes and you get all sorts of crap in the pipes.
Right, yeah, yeah.
Whereas lager is full of carbon dioxide.
Yeah.
It's very sort of processed.
Yeah,
it's pasteurized and, you know, fizzy and everything. So therefore, if they're not serious about, you know, cleaning the pipes and make this is good. This is a fun bit of the conversation.
Yeah, yeah.
Then that's why. So never have Guinness or ale in a crap pub.
Right. Yeah.
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 Just stick to the Fosters.
I will. Yeah.
So therefore. Just in terms of this issue, I mean, there will always be drugs, won't there? Forever. That's it. Right.
Yeah. I mean, the thing, like, drugs just grow out the ground like mushrooms.
Yeah.
You can go just in September, you can just walk out to a field and pick mushrooms and then eat them.
Well, that's it. And you can let fruit goes off and it turns into alcohol and the elephants eat it and get drunk, don't they?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But so there's no way this sort of the war against drugs, all of that stuff, it's not. So what way do you see it going? Do you see it going as legalization? Do you think that'll be the answer?
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of going that way in America. I'm not sure if that, I mean, I think we're going to have a wave of decriminalisation, which has been going since the 90s. You know, when Labour got in, they took a sort of harm reduction approach to drug use, drug misuse, which is totally sensible and, did a lot to improve. You know, there's been a huge drop in crime since the early to mid-90s. Mm. But I think, I mean, I see my friends who use drugs, and I think they're more harmful than people think. I mean, I think marijuana is one of the most dangerous drugs out there, because I've seen my friends, you know, especially in Dumfries and that, where there's maybe not the sort of opportunities there are in London. Mm. People just smoke weed to alleviate the boredom. Yeah. But then before you know it, 15 years are going by and all you're doing is sitting in your arse smoking weed.
Yeah.
And also,
and
it
you
makes
can
it
tell, I mean, if you have a conversation with someone that smokes a lot of marijuana, yeah, you can actually tell.
Yeah. Whereas they're slow, bleary-eyed, you know.
With drinkers, like me, unless they're hungover, you can't really tell.
Yeah, totally. I think people can function at a high level in jobs and socially and be raging alcoholics, whereas if somebody smokes the equivalent amount of marijuana, they won't be able to function as anything except for a Netflix watcher.
Okay, well, there's a couple of things I learned about drugs. First of all, I did a documentary about drugs, or one of the aspects of it was about drug abuse. And here's what I learned. I spoke to a heroin addict, but a former, recovered, which is obviously an amazing achievement.
Yeah.
Two things he said. First of all, he said it was much harder to quit smoking than quit heroin.
Really?
Yeah.
Is that because of the availability?
Amazing. I think so. Nicotine is a highly addictive thing. And by the way, a big problem with marijuana is for many people, it smokes with nicotine. And nicotine is actually the catalyst, in a sense. That's the thing that gets them hooked.
Yeah. So they think they want a joint, but actually they just want some nicotine.
I lived with a friend, a great guy, and he skinned up at 6 p.m. every day.
Right.
And I read a book about smoking. And the smoking book was written by Alan Carr, not the comedian, but the smoking guru. And what this guy said is, Alan Carr said, there are all these people that come to my clinics and they say, well, I'm not addicted to smoking because I only have one cigarette at 4 p.m. every day.
Right.
And he said, well, how will you be if you didn't have that cigarette at 4? And they'd be like, oh, I'd probably go mad. I'd go nuts. Yeah. You know? And what he explained is that addiction has a clock.
Right, yeah.
You know, your body clock sort of configures.
Yeah.
And it was only after reading the book that my friend, who supposedly just smoked marijuana just to relax, but always at 6 p.m.
Yeah.
I'm like, your pattern is because of the nicotine, not because of the... Because what you could do is, if you didn't have the nicotine, you could say, oh, I'm stressed out, I need a bit of relief.
Yeah.
I'll roll a spliff.
Yeah.
But if you're just doing it in a metronomic way at the same time every day.
Yeah.
So that's one thing, is never to combine nicotine, which is quite an evil substance, with anything else you're having. And the other thing is, he said, if you take heroin, which, by the way, you should not.
Yeah.
And I would recommend you don't take heroin.
Yeah.
I think in terms of like ideas, it's like it couldn't be more rubbish.
Yeah.
But he said, if you take it three times and then stop.
And really?
Yeah. I said, why is that? And he said, because the first time is obviously like a shock to the system. You don't know what's going on. And in a way, you don't really enjoy it because you're like, you can't process it. It's a bit like if you go, first time you go to, you know, let's say you go to America for the first time. It's all
I thought you were going to say Legoland.
Or maybe Legoland Windsor is a better example. So by the time you take it a third time is when you've got the expectation of what's about to happen. You can really, in inverted commas, enjoy the journey. And you get to, and it will be amazing.
Yeah.
And he said that the problem with addiction is after that third time, it's downhill from there.
Right.
Number four, number five, number six, number seven, number 1,000, number 2,000.
Yeah.
Will never be as good as number three.
And he said
the way that the addiction gets you is that you're chasing number three forever.
Right.
And you'll never get back there.
Right.
It's the same reason, and it's not quite the same, but like someone who has coffee.
Yeah.
In the end, all they're really drinking coffee to do is to feel normal.
Yeah.
If you've never had coffee and you have coffee, it's like drugs, in my opinion.
I turn into like a manic sort of stormtrooper after I've had a cup of coffee. It's brilliant. I go from like just being somebody who smokes an awful lot of marijuana without actually smoking any to somebody who's hyper efficient, you know.
Yeah. And so there you go. So I think that's an interesting one. But well, listen, our I've got to say, our crack cocaine has arrived, which is lovely, and a Thai lady. So what we're going to do is we're going to pause for a record, and we'll come back. We've got so many big stories to get through, so don't go anywhere. This is Welcome to the Jungle, Guns and Roses, in the company, by the way, of Leo Kurse.
Eats the news on FUBAR Radio.
You're listening to Fubar Radio, the UK's largest ad-free online radio station, in-app and online 24 hours a day. I'm in the company of Leo Kurse, top comedian. And now, Leo, let's get a little plug-in. You're on your way to the Edinburgh Festival Fringe this year?
I am, yeah.
So now, what's the show called?
So I'm doing three shows. I'm doing my solo show. I'm doing Pun Man 2, Girls Just Want to Hear Puns. And okay. that's me as a superhero who just does improvised puns based on what the audience shout out.
Sounds great.
So that's loads of fun. I do another improvised show, Hatin' Live, with Darius Davies.
We're just talking about that. Tell me the premise. It's a brilliant idea.
So the premise is basically the audience write down what they want the comedians to hate on.
Right.
And then so it's subjects that they hate or think that they just want to see the comedians rant about. That goes into a bucket, and then we pull them out, and it's like, so tell us, Mark, why you hate Brexit, or, you know, Salman Rushdie, or whatever it could be. It could be anything. And then the comedian's on the spot, and they have to say, well, I hate Brexit because, you know, this, this, and this. And it's really interesting. It's really fun to watch, especially when they get, like, quite a controversial subject, like Gandhi, or, you know, something like that. And then they've got to, like, come at it from a tangent.
Yeah.
And we get a lot of sort of quite clever political comedians who you know can take angles like Ahir Shah, and we also get, you know, very Route 1 comedians as well going straight down the line and just ranting on stuff.
Can you see comics doing material, or is it generally an improv format given the unpredictability of the material?
I mean the best people who do it, like Trevor Locke, are just pure improv, you know,
right.
What I mean, but then you get people like me who just try and wedge in their material every opportunity they can.
Right.
But yeah, it's best when it's purely improvised. We try and make it as improvised as possible.
Yeah, no, it sounds absolutely amazing. So is there like a Twitter handle for that show, or do we just follow you on Twitter?
There's a Twitter handle, Hatin' Live.
All right.
We've got a Facebook page, and we've got a website as well.
And I know there's a bit of telly interest.
Yeah, we've got Amazon interest. We met with TV producers last week, I think it was. So they're, you know, we're just at the stage where we're sort of getting the format down on paper and getting a sort of showreel together to show to TV. But I think it's a great show. It works so well live. We're doing it at Angel on the, I think it's the 9th of July.
Well, I think it's really clever because I think for years people have been trying to think of how can you do Room 101 in a fresh, fun way.
Yeah.
And there are so many panel shows that have been poor imitations of that
one. Yeah, yeah.
And I just think that actually the Hatin' Live could really take it up a level.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like the delivery is probably quite angry a lot of the time, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So I mean, that's going to have a real tone to it.
That's the great thing about it. I mean, because some people go Route 1 and just directly hate on the things like they do in Room 101.
Yeah.
But a lot of the time, people take quite a sort of, quite a funny angle, so it becomes more of a sort of Radio 4 panel show. You know, somebody...
Whimsy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. People go, you know, really surreal, whimsical, as well as the sort of rants.
Yeah, so. It sounds fantastic and brilliant. Now, a lot of other stories that we'll zoom through. Here's one, and it's a very unfortunate one, and it's from themirror.co.uk. This is a shocking story. A mother has her entire scalp torn off by a sheet metal machine in a horrific freak accident.
Yeah.
At work. She's recovering now, thank God, and the plastic surgeons have worked miracles. But she bent down to pick something up from the floor when the drive shaft pulled her hair, and I can't go into any more details, but she is recovering. She's going to be okay. But that is a rubbish day at the office, isn't it?
Oh, that's one of the worst. I mean, nothing that bad has ever happened to me. The pictures were horrific.
It's like something out of a James Cameron movie, isn't
it?
Yeah,
it really is. I mean, it's you think somebody's had their scalp ripped off, but it's not the sort of clean line that a Millwall supporter would give you with a Stanley knife.
No, it isn't.
This is really Jesus. Come off in bits and chunks, and she's been sort of stapled back together. And yeah,
hope
really,
you're enjoying,
really feel for
enjoying
her.
Your lunch at 12:38 in the afternoon. Here's the thing. What's the worst thing that's happened to you at work?
At work, I got a written warning when I was working for BAE Systems. They said never to mention that I worked for them, but yeah, I got a written warning, and we had a really awkward sort of tribunal or whatever it's called, where you sit in front of the HR people, and they brought out pictures of publicity shots of me sort of pink and naked with a pineapple over my dick,
right.
And so it was one of those. Really awkward. I couldn't believe how much I sweated. I had massive, like, sweat patches under my armpits. Like,
that's remarkable.
Came out to my nipples. It was insane.
It's a good look. You're turning me on now. I, can't think of, I mean, I'm trying to think of horrific things that have happened to me at work, but I think it's normally mundane stuff, isn't
yeah.
it? Like,
grinds you down.
You know, you've got to have, if the tea and coffee making facilities go down, then yeah. that's never going to be good, is it? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Running out of milk is the stuff of, I mean, you can, yes, you can have your scalp ripped off by a machine.
Yeah.
But to not get that first cup of tea on arrival at the office.
Yeah, or having to have one with that red milk that's like really watery and thin.
Yeah, red milk. I like this. It's a new angle. The ultra skimmed.
Yeah.
Not feeling it. Not feeling it at all. I was a radio producer and when I started out in the media. And on one occasion, I just had a real problem filling the show for someone. And it got to like an hour before the show and I still didn't have any guests. And in the end, the presenter turned up, very nice lady, very talented broadcaster. And I just kind of was doing it. I was inexperienced. I was wet behind the ears.
Yeah.
I was probably 22 years of age. You know, I was a kid, really. And I just was like dreading telling her. And it was almost like, it was a bit like an episode of Fawlty Towers, where I'm sort of trying to create the impression that maybe someone's, I think that's the lift. I can hear the lift. I think someone's coming now, you know. And in the end, like 5 minutes before the show, I just said that there's no show. I got nothing. It was just so terrible.
Why was there no show?
But well, I just hadn't booked any guests. I couldn't get any guests.
Oh, right.
And I just went into melt. I wasn't experienced. I didn't know.
It's hard to deliver bad news.
Oh,
it really is. You prefer to put it off until it's inevitable.
And she cried.
No!
Yeah. This was one of the great low points of my whole career.
Oh, yeah, crying at work is always the worst.
And I was so apologetic, obviously.
Yeah.
And what we did is, she went on air, and I was like just this kind of sidekick zoo character for 3 hours.
The equivalent of Leo Kirst.
Here's the thing. Two things happened. Well, exactly. No, but you're premium. Do you know what I mean? This is like, I was not bringing much to the party. I knew nothing. I had nothing to say. I was 22. I mean, I had, you know. Anyhow, but two things happened. One, I got the bug by being on air for those 3 hours.
You got AIDS.
Yes, I did. I did indeed. I got the full HIV.
Right.
No, I basically just got, I enjoyed it.
Right.
You know, and it was a lot of airtime because we were playing records, but we had to fill.
Yeah, yeah.
And actually, I think I was all right, and I was occasionally amusing, and she was really lovely about it by the end.
Yeah, yeah.
And afterwards, she said, look, you don't want to do this, do you? And I said, well, you know, you're great and everything. I protested. She's like, yeah, but you don't want to be a producer, do you? You want to be a presenter, don't you? And I went, well, yeah, I guess I do, really. She's well, if you want to be a presenter, just tell the boss you want to be a presenter.
Yeah.
And now I told the boss I want to be a presenter. He laughed and went, just get on with it. Carry on being a producer.
Yeah.
But I learned a lesson, which is, you know, if there's something you want to do, just tell people that's what you'd like to do. Because the worst that can happen is they'll say no.
Yeah.
But just occasionally they might let you.
Yeah, yeah.
But if you don't say something, then what are they a mind reader?
Yeah, yeah.
But she's like, and it just seems so simple. It's like, if you want to be a presenter, just tell someone.
Yeah.
You know, and I thought it was amazing and great.
Yeah.
And so something, you can have a terrible day at work, but then you always, you know, it could be a disguised opportunity.
Yeah. That's so true.
But I had so many nightmare scenarios with regards to being a radio producer because I was learning on the job.
Yeah.
I think jobs are always hard when you're learning on the job if you haven't got the qualifications.
Yeah. And it's the only way to learn as well. I mean, it's funny because I've studied film and media for like 4 years at the University of Stirling.
Cool.
And didn't really learn anything.
Really?
And then, 2 weeks in a radio station when I finished and I'd learned more about, you know, editing, putting programs together, all the rest of it.
It's one of those things. Yeah. Because I got my first job in radio and I had no experience whatsoever. And this legend called Keith Belcher, who set up LBC.
Right, yeah.
He's a news guru and he was a big giant of a man. And he said, look, he said, there's two ways to learn radio. He said, you can do a course and a degree, one of which he actually teaches, or you can learn on the job. He said, learning on the job is quicker, but a lot more painful.
Yeah.
He said, for example, we'll spend a term on Vox Pops. He said, but you're going to learn that in an afternoon.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's going to be hair-raising.
Yeah.
And there set the template for me of somebody that always learns on the job. I have a degree in politics.
Right, yeah.
But I've never, ever qualified to do the job that I do.
Right, yeah, yeah.
And it's definitely more painful.
Yeah, yeah.
But then I also think sometimes, I mean, stand-up comedy is by definition self-taught, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Did you do any courses?
Although there are courses
did
now.
Did you do any?
I didn't do any courses, no. No, I mean, I've written with people and had advice from people, but I've never done one of these courses. And you can even do it at university now. I think Larry Dean studied it at university. I'm trying to think who else did.
And he's a good comic.
Oh, he's a great comic. Yeah, and he's going stellar, and he's young as well, so he's going to have a great career ahead of him.
Well, good for him. Now we need to talk about a couple of other things which are happening in the world. First of all, I'd like to talk to you about originality. We've had a few stories floating around of supposedly song ideas stolen, riffs copied. The Led Zeppelin guitarist Jimmy Page drew laughter in court today as he said he has a gift for the guitar and denies stealing the riff from Stairway to Heaven in a plagiarism scandal. Now, we know in comedy it's completely unacceptable to steal material. It's one of the real...
But it happens.
But it happens, doesn't it?
So much.
And therefore, you know, can you ever really successfully prosecute for the theft of anything creative or not?
I think it's very difficult. I mean, with stuff like the Jimmy Page guitar riff, I mean, we're talking about some notes in a certain order, and it's like there's been so many songs now. We're not in the 1830s where, you know, there's only three harpsichords in the world. Yeah. There's been so many songs that, you know, things have been repeated. There's only so many notes and so many, you know, different orders they can be put in. And with comedy, I think there's so much parallel thinking in comedy.
Yeah.
You can tell when somebody's genuinely nicking stuff, because they tend not to nick stuff in isolation. I did a gig last week, I better not say which day, with someone who famously lifts stuff from other people. I mean, he absolutely smashed it, but he was doing like the best stuff of other people, you know what I mean?
Right, yeah.
So I'll tell you who that was after. But so I mean, it does happen, and you know, some promoters.
I'm pretty sure it was Rory O'Hanlon.
it wasn't Rory O'Hanlon. just in case he's listening, some promoters, you know, won't. Because there's a sort of they're almost pariahs, these people in the circuit. But on the one hand, they smash it because they're so good, because they're doing the best material of other people.
Yes.
Which, I mean, as good as we are, we can't write stuff that's better than the best of the best comedians.
Well, the
of all
thing
time.
About what is not understood about stand-up comedy is that the hardest part is the writing of the material, isn't it? And in fact, that's really the difference between the greats and the average is just the quality of the material.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, even McIntyre, who is not everyone's cup of tea, but his material, you could read it on a piece of paper and it would be good.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know,
it's
great content.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, Eddie Izzard, Dylan Moran, Stuart Lee, all those people, for me, the way they perform is it's almost like they've written a monologue and they're basically saying it out loud.
Yeah, although the flip side of that is, I mean, you could nick like a Bill Burr joke or something like that and it would just, like, it would sound rubbish because you're not delivering it in that sort.
True.
So,
you know, CK, the same thing.
Brutal! Brutal! Hey, this guy! You know what I think? You know what I mean?
It's true. It's true. So maybe the trick is to be so original and have such a unique persona that you can't be stolen from.
Yeah.
Because
like Bill Burr,
Chris Rock. I think it would be hard to steal from Eddie Izzard. I think it would be hard to steal from Harry Hill.
Yeah, Billy Connolly.
Yeah,
yeah. Although Billy Connolly, I think when you know a lot of the older school comedians started, there was more of a tradition of sort of there were communal jokes that everybody dipped into.
Oh, exactly. It was Jim Davidson.
Yeah,
and Billy Connolly, they, in a way,
Ken Dodd.
They're very different kinds
Bob
of
Monkhouse.
Comedians, but they've all got this thing, as you say, where it's just where they sort of share common stories. It's like public property almost.
Yeah,
I know. It's
open
very very
source.
True. I think we don't have that in the contemporary stand-up circuit. That's not really there anymore.
Yeah,
is it?
I think stand-up's become a lot more personal and observational about you instead of, you know, coming out and doing gags, you know, about your mother-in-law or whatever. It's become a much more long.
Authentic.
Absolutely.
Although I think what's interesting is the only things that all comics are allowed to do is share heckle put downs for some reason. Only about a week ago I said it's a night off for her and a night out for her. Well done, I've got it completely wrong. It's a night out for her and a night off for her immediate family.
I
actually found myself saying those words and everyone laughed.
Yeah, and I'm
like,
writing
that
those
is
down.
The world's oldest joke or oldest heckle put down.
Yeah, and like you do see like some even comedians do it. They'll come out and they'll be like, you know, give us a cheer if you're single, give us a cheer if you're married. Oh, they don't sound as cheerful or something like that. You know what I mean?
You're allowed to do those, are you?
And the thing is, like, people laugh at those, but all the comedians will be sitting at the back, like,
shaking
just
their heads,
hanging themselves. You know what I mean?
I know. It's a crazy thing. So we'll move on to another story, which is the increased popularity of home helps. Okay, and the headline in the Mail Online is why more and more women, particularly, are hiring someone to help with household chores, despite the huge expense. Now, here's the thing: do you have a cleaner?
Yes.
Right. In the warehouse.
In the warehouse.
That sounds like a tough cleaning gig for that lady.
Oh, you know what? We had a party last week, and the floor. I mean, it's like the floor in a Weatherspoons now.
Across. I heard about that party. I heard that party was the third time you had heroin.
Yeah.
That's how good the party was.
Well, I got back from a gig. I was doing a gig in Cheltenham at the Witchwood Festival. Lovely, really lovely gig.
Nice.
And I got back at like 2:30 a.m. so the party was in full swing.
You're kidding me.
I went to my room, I ate a tin of sardines and drank some coffee, and then had to go and appear on FUBAR Radio, TalkSport Radio.
Oh,
like,
really?
4:30 in the morning or 5
in the
morning.
With the brilliant Tom Latchin.
Tom Latchin.
Friend of FUBAR.
Yeah. You had a show on FUBAR.
So you pulled an all-nighter, really?
An all-nighter, yeah. I went to get a kebab at like 4:30 a.m. I've got to say, having a kebab at 4:30 a.m, they think that you're drunk, so they don't put the same effort into the kebab. All the salad was just sitting in horrible water in the trays and stuff. There's hardly any of it left, and the kebab was quite bad.
Do you know what? I think you could be the AA Gill of kind of late night takeaways. That could be a nice little column for you. Yeah. Don't you think? Maybe in the Big Issue. Just the back page of the Big Issue. Neo Curse and the late night munchies. He's like, you know when you've had heroin for the third time in your life and you're absolutely ravenous.
And you've got those on because nothing makes you hungry like heroin.
Nothing. It's incredibly Moorish. So, no, that's amazing. But yeah, so you do have a cleaner, and your cleaner's got the toughest gig, which is a clean up after 14 people.
14 people who make quite a lot of mess anyway, but when they've had a party, it's disgusting. I mean, the floor was just, it was like the floor in an Odeon cinema. It was incredible.
Now, I have a cleaner who comes in. My wife made a brilliant, struck a great deal.
Yeah.
Which is twice a month.
Yeah.
Which I think is great because it's just very affordable, really.
Yeah.
Twice a month is not, I don't think that's overly bling.
No.
I mean, there are some people that have a cleaner goes in every day. It does two or 3 hours. I think twice a month is fine. But if I was living alone, and given the state of my marriage, that's almost inevitable, I don't think I would have a cleaner.
Really?
Yeah.
But aren't you worried that your place would get dirty?
I just feel that, with the dirt and stuff, that there's a tipping point of filth. And then I'll just have, probably once every 6 weeks, I'll put on some very loud early Elton John.
Right.
And I will just attack it. There'll be a blitzkrieg of flash and window lean and all the rest of it.
Yeah,
Mr.
Yeah.
Muscle.
Yeah, yeah.
And that I can live with what I can't live with is mess.
Right.
So I'm all right about dirt.
So you
I don't
keep
like
stuff,
mess.
You keep
I mean,
stuff.
Let's be honest with you, this dirt thing is nonsense for several reasons. One, I have a dishwasher and a washing machine.
Yeah.
So everything that I eat
no need
with,
to show off.
Everything I know, things have worked out.
Got a microwave and
it's
a toaster.
It's not bad, is it?
Yeah.
It's not shit.
It's like a rap song.
I agree. For like someone that's doing like quite well, but not very well. So, yeah. And I tell you what I could do, and I think that there's a great, great market for a tidier upper.
Yeah.
If I could have someone that comes in and just like sorts out receipts and puts them in order in a bag or something and just folds jumpers and things like that.
Yeah.
I'm tempted to like literally kidnap someone from Benetton. And because they're very good at folding jumpers in Benetton.
Yeah, yeah.
It's the main thing they do.
Yeah.
I dated someone from Benetton for a while before I got married. Just, and there was nothing to speak of this girl except her ability to fold knitwear was amazing.
Right, yeah.
And I stuck with it for at least a year just because of that.
Because
of what she could do with a V-neck jumper was amazing.
And did she follow you around the house, sort of saying, can I help you?
Yeah, she did actually. And I went, just give me a couple of minutes on my own and I'll let you know if I need any help. If somebody does that to me in a shop, if someone says, can I help you?
I'll leave the shop.
It's 60 seconds, I'm out of there.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's kryptonite.
It's the worst
if
sales
you,
technique.
If you ignore me,
yeah,
I'll almost certainly buy something.
Yeah.
When will they understand that?
Yeah. Because if I need help, then I know where you are because we're in a shop.
And any retailer that has American owners will have a guy or a lady standing at the door
welcoming,
shouting at you when you come in. It gives me the fright of my life. I'm a private person.
Yeah. We're not a friendly country. We don't do this like over effusive sort of, you know, welcome today, sir. How are you?
It doesn't
all that
fit,
stuff,
does it?
Yeah, it doesn't work with English people.
It doesn't think. So there you go. Well, you know, so you have that situation. I do love the fact that you live in a warehouse. I feel like you're... You're basically, your life is sort of, your home life is an episode of Scooby-Doo.
Yeah, Scooby-Doo meets Skins. Everybody's about 22, so then I'm like old.
I'm imagining that it's quite fun though, living with like other younger people. Does it keep you young?
I'm not sure. It's, I'm not there that, I just really go there to sleep. They all like spend loads of time. Oh, it was great last week. We threw somebody out. I didn't do it. I came back. There was a house meeting going on, and this girl's friend had stolen a laptop. It was really exciting.
Drama.
And everybody was coming out with all this stuff. It was like you hold the conch. They were just going around in a group, and everybody was saying why they hated her and wanted her to move out. It was the best thing I've seen in ages.
Right? Was it? So your life is, but it's a bit sort of like Lost, isn't it? But just in a building.
Yeah.
In London.
Yeah. But Lost is definitely the right word for it.
God.
Yeah.
Now listen, before we go, Sunday's a big day, which is Father's Day.
Yep.
And I would like to take this opportunity to wish my father a very happy Father's Day.
Yeah.
He's lots of things. He's my father, so he gave me life. So even if he was a terrible person, I would still have to thank him for, you know, for that act.
Yeah.
Which we won't go into too much detail about because we don't want to go there.
Yeah.
It's lunchtime. It's a family show.
Yeah.
But not just that. My best friend, my inspiration, my hero, proper legend.
Yeah.
So that's lovely. Is your dad still about?
Yeah, he's still about. He lives in Bicester.
All right. Now tell me about him. What's his name?
His name's Ian.
Ian Curse.
Ian Hamilton Curse.
Oh,
He invented the double-barreled second name because he wanted to be posher.
Did you not get it?
Well, I've still got it for when I go for posh jobs, but not for FUBAR Radio.
Leo Hamilton Curse.
When I go to the BBC, I'm Leo Hamilton Curse, but for FUBAR, I'm Leo Curse.
I like that. I like it. So tell me about Ian. Is he a good man?
Yeah, he's good. Very hardworking, very intelligent. He's a gunsmith.
So what does that mean? He makes guns?
He can make guns, but most of the time he just fixes them.
Right.
Very intelligent, very funny man.
Father?
A good father.
Well, look, you turned out very well, so I'm just thinking he absolutely was a good father. And the role of dads, I mean, dads don't really get the credit, do they? Because Mother's Day is the main thing somehow.
Yeah. And also in adverts. I've never seen an advert where the dad isn't the butt of the joke. You know, it's like, oh, silly dad.
That's
right. You know what I mean?
It's a sort of dad jokes as well are pretty sort of frowned upon, aren't they?
Yeah, even though they're the best.
Yeah. So what will you do? Were you going to celebrate with him or what's the plan?
I'll probably phone him. I mean, the thing is, being men, like, my girlfriend always sends cards. She spends her whole life. About half of her salary goes on Hallmark cards
right,
to her friends and all
amazing.
This sort of stuff. But I believe in text messages.
She sounds very analog, this girl.
She is
writing cards, and does she listen to like an audio cassette?
Yeah, and also when she chops down trees, she keeps the branches analog.
See, and that's what we're talking about. That's what we're paying for, ladies and gentlemen. When we hire Leo Curse onto the show, we're out of time. Thank you for being here. What is your Twitter handle, please?
My Twitter handle is Comedy Leo.
It's been a vintage episode of Mark Dolan Eats News. All down to you. Thanks for listening. We're back at the same time next week. Don't go anywhere and keep it firmly FUBAR, the UK's largest online radio station. We'll play out with the Beatles. Did you hear that bit of feedback? They left that in the record. It was an accident, and George Martin said it sounds great, and the rest is history.
Baby's good to me, you know she's happy as can be, you know she said so. I'm in love with her and I feel fine. Baby says she's mine, you know she tells me all the time, you know she said so. I'm in love with her and I feel fine. I'm so glad that she's mine. Diamond ring. she's mine, you know she tells me all the time, you know she said so. I'm in love with her and I feel fine. I'm so glad that she's my little girl. She's so glad she's telling all the world that her baby buys her things, you know. He buys her diamond rings, you know she said so. She's in love with me and I feel fine. She's in love with me and I